Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today we enter the Grey Lodge. Once again, this is where we talk about Twin Peaks and how great it is. And today we've got a very special episode. Today is the season premiere to season two. Season two, episode one, aka episode nine. May the Giant be with you. And we push the envelope towards the paranormal on this episode. This is one of the most popular episodes in the entire Twin Peaks series, so enjoy that for what it's worth. It has a nice range of Twin Peaks experiences. And I can also say from personal experience, if you fall asleep during this episode, you will surely regret that, because there will be a terrifying awakening at some point before the episode is through, okay? And we'll hit that when we get there. Now, if you recall from the last episode of season one, I discussed how there's multiple characters going through death and rebirth rituals. We went through the list of characters. We've got, of course, FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper is the most popular one. But Leo's been shot. Shelley was burning in the sawmill. Catherine Packard was in the sawmill. Pete Martell ran into the sawmill. Nadine took a bowl of pills. Dr. Jacoby got his wig split. Jacques Renault, he got suffocated, and so on. So this episode, you find out what happened to everybody, right? You had to tune in for the season premiere of season two. And without further ado, we're going to get right into it. Cooper, you know, he got shot. He's on the floor of his room in the Great Northern, and he's bleeding. And the room service guy comes in to give him his warm milkies, which is something I don't understand. That sounds disgusting to me. But hey, man, to each his own. But he's totally clueless, this butler, this server. You know, he's maybe 80 years old. I don't know. He's acting totally aloof. He comes in the room. Cooper's bleeding out on the floor. And it's funny because this butler guy, in the next episode, season two, episode two, Albert Rosenfield, never short on the insults, calls him Senior Drool Cup. Mind that wanders is what he calls him. But you'll notice that, and I should note that a lot of people tuned out during this episode. Apparently, from what I heard back in 91 or whenever this thing aired, people came back excited for Twin Peaks. And of course, I believe David Lynch directed this episode. I stopped making note of that. And the opening scene is, I don't know, what is it, like 10 minutes where nothing's happening? But apparently a lot of people bailed on Twin Peaks, probably at this scene. But what you'll notice is Dale Cooper, he's lying on a rug. And I'll put the photo on the Instagram. But you'll see that there's these right angle symbols all over the rug. Now, of course, this is Freemasonry symbolism, as in compass and square. Well, it's the square in Freemasonry. In fact, they use it as a threat to other Freemasons. Charlemagne the God once told Kanye he wasn't on his square because the worshipful master stands on the square. So here he is having this death and rebirth ritual right next to the square. Plus, you're going to notice that on this part of the episode, Andy, the sheriff deputy, he's calling Cooper's room. Cooper obviously can't pick up the phone, but you hear him, Agent Cooper? Agent Cooper? Are you there? Cooper, are you there? Over and over and over. And the butler hangs up the phone, but you'll see a zoom in on the phone when the butler hangs it up. And this is reminiscent to the beginning of season one in the pilot when Leland dropped the phone when he got the horrific news about the death of his daughter, Laura. And I talked about the idea that this, to me, seemed like it symbolized consciousness ascending and descending. And later on in the show, we're going to see some more significance of the telephone when there is a light pole and telephone wires transmitting energy, electrical wires, all kinds of plays a role in the Twin Peaks universe. So the butler tells Cooper, "I heard about you," and gives him a thumbs up. And he won't leave until Cooper returns the thumbs up, which he eventually does. I mean, the scene just goes on and on. You can feel everybody walking away from their TV sets as you watch it. So after he leaves Cooper, he gets a visit of the giant tall man from the title, you know, "May the Giant Be With You." And here comes the giant, and he tells him three things. He says, "We're here to help you." Take a listen to what he has to say.
"I will tell you three things. If I tell them to you and they come true, then will you believe me?"
"Who's that?"
"Think of me as a friend."
"Where do you come from?"
"The question is, where have you gone?" "The first thing I will tell you is, there's a man in a smiling bag."
"Man in a smiling bag."
"The second thing is, the owls are not what they seem." "The third thing is, without chemicals," he points.
"What do these things mean?"
"This is all I'm permitted to say. Give me your ring. I will return it to you when you find these things to be true." "Want to help you."
"Who's we?"
"One last thing. Leo locked inside a hungry horse. There's a clue at Leo's house." "You will require medical attention."
All right, the three things he said: there's a man in a smiling bag, the owls are not what they seem, and without chemicals, he points. What does it mean? We're going to find out. So the giant man, he takes Cooper's ring and tells him he will return it when Cooper knows of those three things are true. And if you recall, I don't remember which episode, one of the first couple episodes, Audrey had a ring that she showed Cooper at the beginning. What's up with the rings? Well, you got to keep watching Twin Peaks. You're going to have a lot of questionable moments where you say, "Why am I watching this show?" But you got to keep going. So Cooper made it through the death and rebirth ritual, it seems. It appears he's going to make it to the other side. Now, meanwhile, back at One-Eyed Jack's, Ben Horn is trying to get with the new girl, right? That's where the season one finale showed us him trying to get with Audrey, his own daughter. He doesn't know that. And Jerry, he's harassing Blackie, who appears to be strung out on heroin. Audrey improvises by putting a mask on her face as her father, Ben, makes advances towards her and confirms to her that he is the owner of One-Eyed Jack's. Effectively, he is the owner of the whorehouse. So, okay, back to the Great Northern. Cooper decides he's going to talk to Diane. He's going to talk to her through the voice-activated recorder feature. And we find out he was wearing his bulletproof vest, so he lived through the shots. But he rattles off some last requests. Stuff like he wishes to treat people with more respect, which is surprising because he's pretty respectful, right? Simple things. He wants to climb a hill, sit in the cool grass, but not too cool, feel the sun on his face, and so on. make love to a beautiful woman he had affection for. What a guy, you know? And of course, he wants to visit Tibet. Does he get to do all of those things eventually? I don't know. We'll find out. Because right now, Sheriff Truman and the fellows, they show up to finally get Cooper some help. So Cooper gets patched up. Lucy gives him the rundown on what happened last night, which is a lot. And Cooper jokes. He says, how long have I been out? Because it was the busiest night in Twin Peaks history. Cooper insists on leaving the hospital and getting back on the case. And he sees Jacques being wheeled off in a body bag. And he says, is that bag smiling? Right. And later we see an actual body bag hanging up. And it forms a smile. And he confirms that that's what he was looking for from that vision with the giant. Now, of course, that's later in the episode, but I wanted to cover it now. And this is a reference from David Lynch's personal life. I'm going to read to you from his book, Room to Dream. All right. One day on the way to the White Tower to get lunch, I saw the smiling bags of death at the morgue. When you walked down this alley, you'd see the back of the morgue opened up, and there were these rubber body bags hanging out on pegs. They'd hose them out, and water and blood body fluids would drip out, and they sagged in the middle. So they were like big smiles, smiling bags of death. So that's where that comes from. Oh, man. That old David Lynch, seen some things and done some things. Meanwhile, at the Palmer residence, Maddie is staring at the carpet on the floor, and you know, she's thinking about how she had a dream about this carpet. She eventually starts seeing visions of blood on the carpet. Oh, my God. And Leland, he's fully unhinged. He's smiling. He's dancing. He's singing an obnoxious song about little lambs eating ivy. And his hair is Ric Flair white. I mean, this is the next night from the end of season one. And he's done a full 180. What's going on with Leland Palmer, right? So the police, they go to check out Leo Johnson's house. Hawk finds a copy of Flesh World, to be expected, right? And you'll notice the wall has flying duck decor on it, reminiscence of the flying ducks in Cooper's room of the Great Northern on the artwork. Andy accidentally kicks a board that smashes him in the face, and he stumbles around. And this is one of the moments where Twin Peaks tested my faith. I was watching this episode and I remember checking out. I was like, this is so stupid. What are we watching here? But then Albert brought me back in because Albert shows up and he starts making fun of Andy, which brought me back in. I said, okay, all right, I'm not crazy. But inadvertently, Andy reveals some boots and cocaine hidden in the dock. In the deck, excuse me. The boots, they're called Circle Brand. Not sure if that matters in the story, but the camera makes a point to show us. We'll see if that comes up later in the episodes. We go to the double R, and it's jumping. Some rando yells, hot damn, that's that's good pie, or something like that. And Donna meets up with Maddie. And she feels guilty that Jacoby got attacked, even though they didn't do it. Donna gets an anonymous note that says, look into the meals on wheels, while the log lady is furiously chewing gum and sticking it to the wall. Lots of quirky stuff in this episode. So we go back to the sheriff's office. Albert was sent back to Twin Peaks by Gordon Cole, and he's investigating who shot Cooper. We find out Leo Johnson was in jail the night of Teresa Banks' murder, which debunks the theory that Leo is this serial killer. Mike, the one-armed shoe salesman, shows up to talk to Sheriff Truman, and he's here to sell Truman some shoes. But everyone feels like there's something going on. He's got something else in mind. We don't know what yet. Or is it one of those infamous Twin Peaks dead ends? That happens a lot. You'll be like, wow, this must mean something. Nope. They'll never revisit that again. So James is locked up in the jail cell. He tells Truman about the cassette tape that they found. You know how Laura says she found a guy who could light her F-I-R-E. And he recalls how Laura would repeat a poem to him about playing with fire and playing with someone named Bob. And James is saying, this is not Leo Johnson. It's someone else. So there's another piece of evidence saying Leo is not the killer they're looking for here. He's a scumbag, but he's not the killer. So Donna comes by to see James in his cell. She's super ultra mega noir, smoking the ciggies, wearing black sunglasses, being extra sultry. Funny joke about how she started smoking to relieve her tension. And James asks, when did you get so tense? And she replies, when I started smoking. Pretty good. But I'm going to tell you right now, the first time watching Twin Peaks, you have minimal humor for any of this, and you just are annoyed. At least that was my experience. I just was annoyed, and I was like, this show is so stupid. What is going on? Why am I watching this, is what I kept saying. But now on my third viewing, it's pretty funny. I was like, that's actually a really funny joke. We find out that Dr. Jacoby was the person in the woods watching James and Donna bury the heart necklace from, I believe, the pilot or episode one of season one. That's why he had it in the coconut. And he explains, and Dr. Jacoby is, I think I screwed you up here. Was it Sheriff Truman goes to visit Dr. Jacoby in the hospital and Cooper? Yes, both of them visit. And Jacoby explains why Laura had this necklace. It was because she represents and symbolizes the divided heart. Take a listen.
It was her, you see. The necklace. The divided heart. Laura was in fact, well, she was living a double life. Two people. Yeah, but then when I saw her that last time, she, I don't know, she seemed to have reached a kind of peace with herself. Now I believe that what she had in fact arrived at was a decision to end her life.
Are you saying Laura wanted to die?
Doctor?
Laura Palmer did not commit suicide.
No, no. But maybe she allowed herself to be killed.
Jacoby tells us that Laura was the divided heart. He said Laura was living a double life. He said, but then when I saw her that last time, she seemed to have reached a kind of peace with herself. And he believes she found peace by committing to die, not through suicide, but instead allowing herself to be killed, which is very, very dark. All right. And he's speaking about a duality that's present in so many ways in this television show. These opposing forces of life and death, particularly sex and death. Okay. Which is very secret society-esque. So Cooper asks him about being in the hospital with Jacques because he was in the same room. Jacoby was in the same room as Jacques when Jacques was killed. Dr. Jacoby couldn't really tell him anything, but he said there was a smell of scorched engine oil in the air when he was killed. Now, this, I don't know if this is the first time this is brought up in Twin Peaks, but it happens many, many times. You'll find that when, what should I tell you? There's a connection to be had with this smell of scorched engine oil and bad things. All right. Now, the episode kind of keeps going. Lots of relationship building in this episode. Bobby visits Shelley in the hospital. They have a tender little moment. Big Ed shares his story about shooting out Nadine's eye, which you could read about in the Secret History of Twin Peaks. Albert snickers. This is when Cooper sees the smiling body bag, by the way. Big Ed talks about how he was in love with Norma, but she ran off with Hank. And he explains his ethos. And his ethos is, you make your bed, you sleep in it. Very old school way of thinking. And look, that's actually very respectable, right? Big Ed is visiting Nadine because she is in a coma. And to show you how much of a stand-up guy Big Ed is, like, he, you know, he feels a responsibility to take care of Nadine, even though he's in love with Norma. And you find out in the book that he got shipped off to Vietnam and he was writing letters to Norma. And the implication is that Hank threw those letters away and moved in and swooped Norma up. Pete Martell wakes up. He didn't die in the sawmill fire. He had smoke inhalation problems. Bobby goes to the diner and his father, you know, Major Briggs, he's already there. And they try to connect with each other, but they have this classic father-son coldness about them. But Major Briggs, he, you know, they're trying to connect. And Bobby's like, how was work? And, you know, Papa Briggs there, he can't tell Bobby what he does for a living because it's classified, right? But what he does do is he explains to Bobby how he had a vision. And he explains that a vision is different than a dream. He says a dream is the cataloging of the day's events. A vision is the mind revealing itself to itself. Pretty deep stuff. He says, look, Bobby, I had a vision of you living a life of joy. And we embraced and we were together as one. And you see this moment of connection for Bobby and his father for the first time. And I would argue this is a very major turning point for Bobby. Because Bobby's a pretty rotten apple at this point. And, you know, maybe he just wanted affection from his father. And he got it. So Cooper runs through the whole story of what they believed happened to Laura Palmer at this point. I'm going to play the full clip. This is a good breakdown of everything that we can expect up to this point. Take a listen.
The night Laura Palmer was killed, it appears she made two appointments. In her diary, she had written, nervous about meeting Jay tonight. I now believe this was a reference to James Hurley. She was nervous because she planned to tell him she didn't want to see him anymore. Before she snuck out of the house, she received a phone call.
We believe it was Leo Johnson making the second appointment for sometime later that night.
Laura met James, was with him until 12:30, when at the intersection of Sparkwood and 21, she jumped from the bike and ran into the woods. We believe it was there that she met up with Jacques Renault, Leo Johnson, and Ronette Pulaski. Together, they drove to the foot of the trail leading to Jacques' cabin. They climbed the trail. They were heard passing by the cabin of a log lady. They reached Jacques Renault's cabin at approximately 1 a.m. Drugs and alcohol were consumed. Laura was tied up and had sexual relations with both Leo and Jacques. Waldo the bird was let out of his cage and attacked Laura. Leo and Jacques fought. Jacques went outside and passed out. When it came to, Leo and the girls were gone. We believe Leo hiked back down the trail to his Corvette alone, leaving the girls behind.
The reason being, there was a third man.
Deputy Hawk found evidence of a third man outside the window of Jacques' cabin.
The third man took Laura and Ronette to the train car where they were tied up. Laura for the second time, Ronette for the first.
Using a blunt object, the killer hit Ronette and knocked her unconscious. He must have been so intent on killing Laura, he didn't realize that Ronette regained consciousness and escaped.
Either he didn't know or he didn't care. He made a small amount of dirt and put the half-heart necklace of Laura's on top. He then placed a small cutout letter R under the nail of her left ring finger. You'll recall that he placed the letter T under the fingernail of Teresa Banks. He left a note written in blood, fire, walk with me.
Here's the interesting thing. The blood on the note was tested. It doesn't match Leo's, Jacques, Laura's, or Ronette's.
So, we surmise the killer wrote the note in his own blood. It's a rare type, AB negative. The towel that Deputy Hawk found 5 miles down the tracks was soaked in blood of that type. He also found, near the towel, scraps of faded paper.
These scraps may have been left by the killer. They'll be sent back to Washington, D.C. for testing.
So there's the whole story of where we're at this point. And during the show, Lynch pans over this table full of donuts, of course. So we got rings and donuts and all kinds of stuff going on, right? All these circles. But that's a good sum up to where we are currently in the murder mystery of Laura Palmer. We also found out Deputy Hawk found evidence of a third man outside of Leo and Jacques. So now it's like, okay, the third man's the killer. There was blood on a note that said, "Fire, walk with me," but it didn't match anyone's DNA, so they suspect that's the killer. That's the third man. All right? So Pete and Truman, they're having a conversation at his house, at Pete Martell's house, and Sheriff Truman tells Pete that they haven't found Catherine yet, and Pete says, he says something interesting. He says, if there was an atomic war, he'd expect Catherine to be the last person standing. Now, that's an interesting choice of terms here, because the splitting of the atom is a key component to this whole thing. And I can't wait till we get to season three, because then I can start sort of unloading a lot of these ideas of the heavy-duty occult symbolism that you can expect from Twin Peaks. Because some of this stuff I can't go too in-depth on yet, or tell you how it fits into the storyline, because it might give away some things that make it fun to watch. What I can say is, if you are watching Twin Peaks for the first time, my advice is to just go ahead and finish the whole thing. Try to get way ahead of me, keep going, and then revisit. And when I watched Twin Peaks the first time, I remember thinking, okay, there's some stuff here, but I'm certainly not watching this 52-hour saga a second time. Well, I'm already on my third, folks. And I'm on season three for my third time, and I'll be starting all over again to season four again. We're going to do it again. So just go ahead and wrap it all up. But if you don't want to do that, that's fine. I'm going to try to walk you through and unfold it as we go. But the atomic age marks a shift in human consciousness. And there's conspiracy theories about how that plays a role in reality and Twin Peaks, ufology, all the things. All right. And you probably already know where I'm going with that, but hey, whatever. And by the way, this is where we find out that Pete Martell is living in what they call the Blue Pine Lodge. Now, isn't that interesting? Because, and that's the name of their house on the Black Lake. This is where Laura Palmer was found, if I'm not mistaken. That's where her body was. And in Freemasonry, the Blue Lodge is the first 3 degrees of initiation. Those first 3 degrees of initiation are the Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft, and Master Mason degrees. All right. Now, it's also interesting that it is on Black Lake, because black, of course, is the symbolic color of death and the Grim Reaper, and even the forces of Saturn. What do they call it? The Black Lodge, right? Is where the dark forces are. So it is interesting that Laura Palmer's body would end up in the Black Lake. Moving on. The Horn brothers, they meet up with Hank to discuss their nefarious plans. Ben is upset that Hank hadn't accomplished his mission of killing Leo Johnson. And we also confirmed that the plan was for him to kill Catherine in the sawmill so that Leo and Catherine get blamed for burning down the sawmill. Meanwhile, at One-Eyed Jack's, Audrey, she's wearing the red heels, much like we see her change into in the pilot. Because remember, she shows up with the black and white shoes, and then she changes them for red heels in the locker at the beginning of the pilot. I'm going off of memory there. I could be wrong. Don't crucify me if I got that wrong, but I'm pretty sure she puts on red heels. And she's wondering why Blackie's messing with her, right? Because Blackie's like pissed off at her. She's like, "What's your damage, Blackie?" And Blackie reveals, she's like, "Look, you didn't let the owner sleep with you." Because Blackie doesn't realize that Ben Horn is Audrey's father. So there's some tension building there. Meanwhile, there's a dinner party at the Palmer residence, and Leland sings a rendition of Judy Garland's song, Get Happy, which has lyrics about getting ready for the judgment day. Now, this is an interesting choice of connections here. We also find, because at the Palmer residence, the Haywards are also over, right? Dr. Haywood, his wife, and Donna. And we meet Gersten Hayward. She is Donna's little sister. And they're putting on a little, I don't know, talent show, pageant, whatever. Just a little get-together kind of thing. And she's playing a host. who says, I'm the fairy princess from my school play, and she is dressed up like Glinda the Good Witch from Wizard of Oz. She even has the star wand, the wand with a star on the end of it. And of course, Judy Garland was also in Wizard of Oz as Dorothy. So you got these nods to Wizard of Oz, which we already know David Lynch is obsessed with Wizard of Oz. So of course there's Wizard of Oz baked into Twin Peaks. And with it comes the idea of questioning dreams and going on evolutionary journeys and entering different worlds. All right. So Leland, he is asked why he's got a head full of white hair. What's up with the Ric Flair hair, Leland? He says, look, I just woke up and in the mirror, there's this head full of gray hair. And he says, it's a turning point. And you can see that he's in an upbeat mood. He was all mopey and emo the first season, but now he's ready to, you know, take on the world. So much so that he gets excited and he's like, I'm going to sing. And he does this rendition of Get Happy. And when he starts singing aggressively and more aggressively, and he eventually passes out, and Dr. Haywood wakes him up with some smelling salt. And I got woken up with some smelling salt, and that in fact will wake you from the dead. So it is a whole thing. He wakes up and he says, begin the beginning. And so it seems like there's something going on with Leland, right? This is a different Leland, almost like he's possessed by a different spirit. And okay, then we get back to Cooper. He's in bed at the Great Northern, talking to Diane about these odd visions. And at the same time he's talking into his recorder, Audrey is at One Eye Jackson. She's trying to channel Cooper. She's, you know, just speaking to an empty room. But she's like, you know, she's praying that that he sees the note that she left for him, which we find out is under the bed now. It slid under the bed. And she's afraid. She's fearful. She's gone in too deep and she needs his help. And at the same time, back in Cooper's room, the giant visits Cooper again. Take a listen.
Sorry to wake you.
I am not dreaming.
I forgot to tell you something.
You were right about the smiling bag.
The things I tell you will not be wrong. Better to listen than to talk.
I believe you.
Don't search for all the answers at once. A path is formed by laying one stone at a time. One person saw the third man. Three have seen him, yes. But not his body. One only, known to you, ready now to talk. One more thing. You forgot something.
What?
Did Audrey trigger this whole sequence? Did she manifest the giant to visit Cooper? The giant tells Cooper, one person saw the third man, three have seen him, but not his body. Only one has seen him, and they are now ready to talk. And then he tells Cooper he forgot something and shoots this giant golden orb blasting into Cooper's body. Again, the golden orb represents something, a recurring role in Twin Peaks. I know. There's so many secrets left to be revealed. But I'm trying to sort of slowly tease through this. Because I'm still learning, too. I'm still trying to understand what all this stuff means. But the golden orbs appear more so in Season 3. That's where we'll have that conversation. And then finally, Ronette Pulaski. She's in the hospital bed trying to gain consciousness. And her arms begin to rise, all creepy, like Frankenstein. And she's she's having visions of the train, and you see her memory of what appears to be Bob killing Laura, and it's absolutely gory. I mean, it's 30 seconds of terrifyingness. And you see Bob howling into the night, and the credits roll. And I think this is what the giant is referring to. Because he said, only one has seen it, and they are now ready to talk. It's Ronette waking up from her slumber there, her coma. And it's an absolutely terrifying scene. That's why I say, do not fall asleep during this episode, because you're going to wake up. I fell asleep with it once. I was watching it on my my phone. And I woke up to that scene of screaming, and I could see Bob howling, and I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to go to sleep again. It's a terrifying scene. And if you like that, boy oh boy, you're going to enjoy Fire Walk With Me, which is one of the greatest films of all time. But to really enjoy Fire Walk With Me, I feel like you got to get through season one and two first. Season two has some low points, arguably. And we're going to get to those. But that was season two, episode one, the season premiere of Twin Peaks. One of the most popular episodes from the fans. And I get it. It's actually a really great episode. But like I said before, you know, you don't really truly appreciate Twin Peaks till you've made it all the way through and you start thinking about it. And that's a long ways to go, right? But you got to keep going. Thank you for listening to the show. Till next time, stay woke.